Oh, hi, Mark.
That scream coming from we don't know where, deep down somewhere, can only mean one thing. It is the appearance of Mark Grody. You can follow him at Grody Sports. You can follow him on the Take the North podcast. You can follow him on the Scores on the Clock, because the Bears will be on the clock. You can follow him on every score on the show. He is contractually obligated to show up everywhere, including Saturday Suckage, of which he is co-founder. Oh, hi, Mark.
Hey. What's going on, Steve? Yeah, I am a proud co-founder of Saturday Suckage. I just want that to be made clear. I don't know if I say it enough.
Yeah, I know you don't. There's so many other properties and bits of equity that you have. You're also a co-founder of the Wake and Bake Club, which we'll have a meeting before this show gets out. And I will bring you this. I was saving this for when you came on. The photo text I got today from Julie Swyka. It says, morning, sunshine. Tried First Watch this week, the new breakfast place in our area, and look at what they wrap their silverware in. And it happens to be a paper band that says, wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey.
That's awesome. Everybody's, shout out to Julie Swyka.
Yeah, she's sending it along. So, and that's part
she's
of
the best. That doesn't compute with me, though, because maybe your brain works the same way mine does in sports. When you hear wakey, wakey, what do you think of?
Duncan Keith and
there you go.
David Backus. Yeah, wakey, there wakey, you go. Backus. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was Duncan Keith. It wasn't Seabrook. Yeah, it was. For some reason, I had Seabrook in my head that did that. But it was
Duncan Keith.
It was Duncan Keith.
Yeah,
wakey, 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 wakey Backus.
Well, which could have been. You know what? We'll steal any kind of branding for the Wake and Bake Club that we can. So
yeah, oh, absolutely.
I'm good.
And
with
I
that.
Know, and I do know we shouldn't be laughing about that, but it was hilarious.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And wakey, then wakey. And then I felt bad. I thought it was very funny, but David Backus turns out to be a guy. He and his wife are bringing back puppies. They're saving puppies. Oh. They're saving dogs from in the Olympics, and they're making homes for dogs in the United States. Like, oh, it was Seabrook who laid the hit on him. And it was,
yeah, that's right. Okay, that's where the confusion came
and
in.
It
right?
was
Seabrook laid the, but that makes sense because he was the bigger defender. Duncan Keith, not a big guy.
No, but tough and strong and
oh my god,
certainly had the whole wakey bakey thing down. So anyways, now that we've established all your credentials and all your bona fides,
yes,
talking with Kyron Samuels, who works for SI, and talking about the Bears draft, and naturally brought up especially Will Campbell's statement of defiance and using of the B and the S word, talking about you know there's no problem with my arm length when I'm keeping guys off my quarterback and playing at LSU. So can you give us any insight in what the Bears believe about the value or demands of an arm measurement of a tackle, and of the, say, the first three tackles you believe might go in the first 10 picks or so, certainly high in the first round. Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I mean, we go back to the, it was just last year we were doing this with Peter Skoronski, right?
Yes, we were. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a regular thing. It's an annual, a tradition unlike any other, arm length. I got to say, Will Campbell's arm measurements, it should be a score caller's moniker. That's what will happen, or a texture's moniker. No,
it is funny how we all get a hold of this, because it comes from the scouts and those who believe in, you know, the advanced scouting of these players, and it has definitely been shown in the NFL that the guys with shorter arms do not end up being tackles. And you ask about the Bears specifically, I mean, we could say what we want about Braxton Jones, you know, like he's the guy that's easy to pick on the offensive line, but what he has is length. And that is one of the things that Ryan Poles was attracted to about Braxton Jones when he came in. Not just the makeup of the kid, but just the physical tools and the length. So that probably should tell you something right there. about the Bears, and if Will Campbell was to fall to them, I think you'd have an interesting situation. It just depends on how much they would believe in him if they were to slot him at guard. And I don't know that that's something that Will Campbell would want or be capable of. I don't know if they'd have a choice in the matter. But, you know, you look along the Bears' offensive line, and it, obviously what they've done on the inside with Drew Dahlman and then Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson on either side, would it be such a bad thing if Will Campbell came to the Bears and they said, oh, we're going to make you a guard and we're going to have you compete with Jonah Jackson at right guard?
I don't think so, because I've lobbied since the trades and the signing of Dahlman. I've lobbied for Ryan Poles, or Ben Johnson telling Ryan Poles what to do. I've lobbied for them drafting those guys, those positions, those players, because you had to go out and overpay for those guys, whether in draft capital or money or both. Because you didn't have them, you haven't developed them, they're not on your roster, you need to pay for that. Well, now you need to get on with the idea of running them through your system. So I have no problem with that. You want to play tackle? That's fine. If you get Will Campbell, he's there at 10, and that's the best athlete there for you at either offensive line position. You're going to need that. You've shown you've needed that, and you need depth, because Ryan Poles did a lousy job at getting depth when he said he had the best depth he's seen on the offensive line since he's been here. So I really don't have a problem with that. Will Campbell, however, seems to fashion himself a tackle. So how do players aren't always grateful that they're part of an NFL organization. So
everybody wants to be a tackle on the offensive line. Like, you think about Tevin Jenkins. Jenkins comes to the Bears. He was supposed to replace Charles Leno Jr., and it obviously didn't work out that way. It got to a point where Tevin Jenkins was almost not on the Bears, or at least there was definitely some energy out in the NFL system that Tevin Jenkins may have wanted out. They put him at guard. He was really good at guard. He seemed, and now Tevin Jenkins is probably going to, you know, have a nice career eventually. I mean, in terms of getting an extended contract, playing the guard spot. So, yeah, I mean, this is what good GMs, good coaching staffs, good offensive line coaches, and I don't know about Dan Rauscher yet, like if he's going to be good for the Bears, but you have to have a little bit of an imagination and you have to allow for versatility, whether the player likes it or not. I mean, I go back to Skoronski. Skoronski's a guard. We went through this whole thing last year, right? Yeah. We went through the whole thing. We had similar things were said, probably, paraphrasing, right? Skoronski was probably offended. He was probably like, yo, I've done this my whole life. People came on the radio and said, come on, I've seen this guy play hard. He's a guard. So, yeah, so, I mean, like, I think that that would put the Bears in a good situation. And to your point, Steve, I mean, you cannot not have enough capable offensive linemen, whether they are starters and whether they are depth. And I think the overall picture of the Bears right now, it's such a great it's a mysterious place that we're in right now, because the Bears can go, in our minds, tons of directions because of what they've already done. And it's a unique spot. I like the spot the Bears are in, because we could talk about just about any position right now and most would make sense because of what they've already done.
And we will at this moment, but I want to remind the class that joining me on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Mark Grody. Hey. Download the Circa app today. Mark Grody, he's everywhere. He's everything to everyone. If you listen to this radio station, and you're a fool if you don't listen to this radio station. So the one area, and I want them to draft linemen, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, because it wasn't just filling guard, center, guard. It was Grady Jarrett and Dio Odengbo. And though anywhere, those first three picks, if they're all on one of the lines, I'm good with that. There is another position, and I know you guys spent some time the other day on the podcast, and I think on the air with Rami Makhlouf the other day, about Jaquan Brisker's Instagram. Mm-hmm. And safety is a position of need. You don't want to have to draft for need, certainly not early. You want the best athlete available. If that best athlete happens to fit the position you need, then you got yourself a bingo. We have a bingo. So what do you think? What do you trust? Share with the class what Jaquan Brisker wrote, what he presented publicly. And do you have a safety you really like?
Interesting. I will read what Jaquan Brisker, also known as Quanny B.
Quanny B.
That's right. Quanny B underscore for all you Instagram fans, for all you Quanny B Jaquan Brisker fans. And I am a Jaquan Brisker fan. He said, this was his post that you were referencing here. This is for the I will read this for your class, Steve, as you like to say.
Uh-huh.
I will share with the class.
Sure.
He wrote, I promise to come back better than ever. Bang. Right? Isn't that what we say for an exclamation point? Bang. Your unwavering support means everything to me in these challenging times. From the heart, I appreciate each and every one of my fans, your prayers, and your messages. We didn't finish strong, and I say it's all my fault. I wish I could have fought alongside my team to win. That's my true passion and purpose. I will rise from this and come back and take what is mine. Year four will be special. It will be a testament to our strength and resilience. Until I return, remember, there are no comparisons. What do I think about this? I think that this is a player that has heard, you know, from you and I talking, from other people talking, this, just to put it bluntly, that he's damaged goods because of the multiple concussions that he has had. And I think that most of us, I'll speak for me, in this era of being better educated over the last decade plus about concussions, the first thing I think about is him as a person and longevity. And I think that's what the Bears were thinking last year when they called it off for the rest of the season for him. Now, I don't know if Brisker is at all, like, because, I mean, we're just sitting here trying to interpret something on Instagram. I remember talking to him in the locker room while he was out. You know, he would be in there occasionally. There was nothing formal we were allowed to do with the players. But I would talk to Jaquan Brisker, and the part that I can share with you is that Brisker, you know, when they were coming up to that gauntlet of games at the end of the season that we all obsessed over at the beginning of the season and then all season,
mm-hmm.
he told me just in our casual conversations that that was his goal to come back for that. Obviously, that didn't work out. I don't know if there was, you know, more failed testing, if it was an abundance of caution, which I think it was. So I think that this was, and this is not something to mess with, I think the Bears probably handled this correctly. And it sounds like Brisker is going to be back for training camp, good to go, healthy, from everybody that I've spoken to, including Kyler Gordon on the record when we were all recently, and when I say we, I mean the Bears' core of reporters, were at an event and got to put the mics around Kyler Gordon, and I asked him, how's Jaquan Brisker doing? And he said, great. So, and it seemed like an earnest response. So that's where I stand with him. As far as drafting a safety, I don't really have a good name for you right now. I've been tangled up in other positions, but it's a good question, Steve. Not only do you have that, you know, the number 10 pick in the first round, but think about those two second rounders as well. And if I'm not mistaken, because they've had so many changes here, they've got the 10th pick, two twos, a three, a five, and a couple of sevens that exist as well. So it wouldn't be shocking if somewhere in there they drafted a safety, but I don't think at number 10. I don't think that that is not considered an elite, you know, position, a must position. So I think it would probably be later if they covered themselves with a safety.
Well, that's what Ryan Poles is on Pro Football Talk, the podcast, and he had said that safety is the hardest position for most personnel evaluators too, because you're not sure what was the assignment, how did they end up at the place they ended up, and sometimes as the, you know, they're playing center field, they're roving, they see an opportunity, they read something, they're going to hit, and well, they shouldn't have been there, or maybe they were supposed to be there and it looks like they gave up, you know, they abandoned their post and there's a guy running free behind. So he said that was the most difficult position for him to gauge. And yet he got Jaquan Brisker right, and he got a bunch of draft choices on the offensive line wrong, and he's a former offensive lineman. So this really scares me there. But
yeah,
but I just wanted to see if you – I agree. It's not that important. It's not important enough that you're going to spend the 10th overall pick. They have 39. They got 41. They got 72. I could see it happening there, and I see it's necessary. Whatever – you know, whatever they say, players want to play. Teammates want those players to play. Jaquan Brisker is well-liked and well-respected. The way he plays is the reason he got into this situation, because he is tough, he is fearless, he's ferocious. And it's going to take one of those, one play, one snap, one tackle, and right, with a concussion.
I hate thinking about that, but you're right. And he does play ferociously, and that's part of why I like him.
Yeah, we all love him for that reason.
Yeah, and offenses need to account for him. And I don't want to get carried away. I've been trying to word this correctly, because I'm not saying that the offensive coordinator goes into the meeting and says, we've got to stop Jaquan Brisker. But you do have to account for him. You do have to be coached up on him. What he will do, he will hurt you if you're not playing, you know, good fundamental football, if you're not aware. I will say this, too, about, like, if we want to talk about the safety spot and Ryan Poles, it's pretty perfect. They drafted in Ryan Poles' first draft, Jaquan Brisker was taken in the second round out of Penn State. Yeah. So, again, I direct you to those two second-round picks that the Bears have. Ryan Poles had success with that.
Right. Please, go back to please it, be it, it seated. Was, please be seated in the second round.
Him and Kyler Gordon, those are two success stories on Ryan Poles' resume, even if Brisker has been banged up.
So let me ask you about Brisker, because there's a, I don't want to call it the butterfly effect, where you have, you know, a butterfly flapping its wings in China, and that affects Jaden Daniels throwing a Hail Mary. But I want to come back to the Hail Mary, because Jaquan Brisker was already out. He would be done for the season. He suffered his injury before that Washington game. That was the turning point of this season. It went right into the toilet. Would Jaquan Brisker have been on the field instead of Tyreek Stevenson on that play?
Man.
Just asking.
Honestly, Steve, I don't know the answer to that.
I never thought of it until now.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Because Jaquan Brisker is smarter than Tyreek Stevenson. I'm going to go that far with it. That's the kind of guy they would have wanted.
Yeah, I don't want to get into aptitude or IQ, but I would like to think that Jaquan Brisker probably would not have done what Tyreek Stevenson did that day. As a matter of fact, there's probably about 51 other guys on the roster who wouldn't have done Tyreek Stevenson done. That was a one-of-one moment, something that's going to go down. I mean, that is, unfortunately for him, 30 years from now, that's going to be on somebody's top 10 list of boneheaded NFL plays on the NFL Network, you know, or wherever it goes down. That is smack dab on his resume, and he's got a chance over the next couple of years to totally redeem himself.
Well, there's viral video that goes along with it, so I think you're right in that will last.
Thank you. Going out on a limb on that one, aren't I, Steve?
There you go. So if the Bears are done with a free agency shop, they went on, even though the initial splash of free agency, what are your assessments of what they did later on? They went big, and then they went home, and then they went out shopping again, and seemed to really home in on, well, we need this kick returner. Well, there's a third receiver. Yeah. We got a little more of this guy's ability there. What do you think of what they did after the trades and the signing of Dahlman?
Yeah, I really like you mentioned the kick returner, Devin Duvernay, and that's just a good move. That stabilizes a position that you don't want to have to think about. You know what I mean? Like, they don't want it. It's annoying to ask about that, and it's annoying to be asked about that. So when you could have a guy that you know is going to be a big part of your special teams, and Duvernay can be a part of the receiving core as well. Like, he'll pop up every once in a while and be like, oh my God, Duvernay makes a play. So I love that. Former All-Pro, Pro Bowler, all that kind of stuff. So he's good. Like, he's a guy you don't got to worry about. And then I think, you know, Alamide Zaccheaus is an interesting guy as well, a classic 3 or 4 wide receiver who, you know, it really comes down to Caleb Williams and his comfort with Zaccheaus, so I can't quite call it on that yet. But considering the receivers that you already have on this roster, that those are the types of guys you have to start to think about. Rome Odunze will further be developed, and maybe he will sprout next year. We know what DJ Moore is. Hopefully that chemistry continues to improve with Caleb Williams. And then you've got Cole Kmet, obviously, who you want to see the chemistry continue. And then this is just another weapon, another guy for Caleb Williams. So those are the kind of shrewd, maybe not thrilling moves that have to be made to fill out a roster, as not everybody that they sign or trade for is going to be Drew Dahlman or Joe Tooney.
You bring up tight end, and there are a couple tight ends being talked about as top 10 worthy, and they're the Bears picking at 10. And I think Shane Waldron hijacked Cole Kmet's growth. He was making terrific progress. He was a top 10 tight end. He was performing. He was everything you want a tight end to be in terms of clutch plays and receiving and that target and a safety valve and all of that. And then Shane Waldron hijacked it, and he never seemed to really find what he was. And the talk about tight end kind of bothers me. I'm not a member of the Kmet family. I don't know if that is instead of him or if Ben Johnson has particular fun planned with a two tight end setup, both of whom can catch, both of whom would be weapons, both of whom could be Sam LaPorta when they grow up, that kind of stuff. What do you think?
No, by the way, first of all, I would argue that it was Jimmy Graham who hijacked Cole Kmet's career. remember that?
Like, yeah, Matt Nagy, Ryan, after all those Ryan games. Pace.
Hey, where was Cole Kmet? Hey, yeah. Now I think about that. Like, that first year he was there, it's like, where's all the targets for Cole Kmet? How come he's not on the field? Why is Jimmy Graham on the field? And guess what? Now here we are last year, Steve, talking about what the hell's going on. I mean, Cole Kmet had some really good games last year. Some flashy moments for sure. And he proved the year before that he can be really good. So I think that we all love watching the development of Cole Kmet. But it wasn't there last year. And obviously you had a rookie quarterback. So it's probably pretty easy to, and I'm pretty comfortable in pinning that on the quarterback and the offensive coordinator and the play calling. All of that comes together. But the fact is, at the base of it, even if you didn't watch any games, we can make the statement that there was not good chemistry between Caleb Williams and Cole Kmet. And so even though you have all these legitimate factors and excuses, if you want to call it that, you got to take note of it. You have to take note of it and say, something's not right there. Is it Cole's fault? I don't know. Was it Caleb's fault? I don't know. Was it the coach's fault? I don't know. But something has to be addressed in that tight ends room. And even if you didn't need, even if Cole Kmet had 900 yards and 12 touchdowns last year, it's not crazy in this version of the NFL. If you see one of those difference-making tight ends, you should probably grab him if you've got the chance and the resources, because we've seen how legitimate that is to offenses around the NFL. All that being said, I don't think Tyler Warren's going to be there at 10.
Yeah.
And if he is, I'd have zero problem with the Bears taking him.
I love the way that you're expressing the Cole Kmet tight end problem, the growth of the tight end, sounding like Alex Trebek from SNL. That's exactly where you were headed. That's it.
All you have to do is catch the football. If you catch the football, you can make some runs. Actually, I should be Caleb Williams. All you have to do is throw the ball to Cole Kmet, and you will win the game.
There you go. That's it. Just write Cole Kmet.
Sorry,
name.
I didn't realize I was speaking in such syncopation, but I will. I'll accept that.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was it the urgency of it, the humanity of it, the need for that. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Mark. No. There. It is right. It's like so many positions on the Bears. It's silly to say, yeah, we're good. We got enough.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say.
All right. Well, that is all you have to say. I appreciate you saying everything you said on my show on Saturday Suckage, of which you're a co-founder. And later on, WB Club, we'll have a short meeting with basically palm to forehead, like, where has this been? What took you so long to get along with this? So anyway,
Patch me in. Patch me in for that. I'll be ready.
There you go. All right. He's Mark.
See you, buddy.
Bye, Mark. I want to alert you to this. Stop what you're doing and listen. The Cubs continue their series tonight against the Diamondbacks. Pre-game coverage will begin at 6:35 p.m. First pitch at 7:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Meanwhile, The Bulls host the Mavericks tonight at United Center. Coverage begins at 6:45 on News Radio WBBM 780 AM. Let's talk about the Bulls. After the miracle on Madison Street, let's talk to Bill Wennington after this. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
So Doncic in play, far sideline, left forecourt. Doncic holding and looking and play to Reeves. Works on Williams to the rim, and the layup is good. 3.3 left. 117-116 Lakers. Williams to Giddey over the midcourt line. Giddey goes. Midcourt. Oh! It's good! It's good! It's good! Bulls win! Bulls win! Bulls win! Josh Giddey from midcourt from the Bulls logo. What a ball game! Unbelievable! Unbelievable! Josh Giddey, I love you!
Bill Wennington, hearing that back, I was just laughing out loud. When you hear that, what did you do? What are you thinking? The miracle on Madison Street.
Well, I wanted to start screaming and yelling, but I also understand I got to let Chuck make the call. So you could hear in the beginning, both of us like, oh, and I got to stop. I got to contain myself for a minute and let him make the call. Otherwise, on the radio, it's not good when I'm yelling over him saying what a great play that was. So I had to contain myself. But it was I'm thinking that's unbelievable. And these guys did a phenomenal job in the game, because it was a game where before the game started, you knew the Lakers wanted to come out and get the Bulls back for beating them. Scoring like 146 points on them back in L.A. a week ago. And the Bulls jump out to a 13-point lead, which is great, and thinking, oh, wow, maybe not. But then, you know, and they built that up to an 18-point lead in the third quarter. The Lakers did. They were ahead at halftime. They erased the 13-point lead. But the Bulls just battled back, and it was a real team effort. You talk about the heroics of Josh Giddey at the end of the game, which were phenomenal because he did – what he kind of did was Jordan-esque. I mean, he made the steal off of LeBron, kicked it out to Kobe, who nails the three on the play right before the one where you guys started. And you know, and then obviously he makes the game winner at the very end. But and then Kevin Huerter hit some big shots. Vooch hit a big shot. So it's really a great team effort. And this team is really kind of gelling now. And I think it's unexpected. I think, you know, kind of around the trade deadline, we traded Zach. I don't think anyone expected this team to turn it around the way they have.
Gone 12-11 since trading Zach LaVine. And I had Chuck on a couple of weeks ago. And you could see then the growth of Josh Giddey. And not just because the score sheet was stuffed, but the way it was happening. And also the way he carried himself, and Chuck talks to him, you talk to him, so you have a better sense of that. It seemed as though that was the opportunity for him to take ownership of the team, take leadership of the team, take control of it, the way he probably always imagined he should have, given the position he plays. Have you seen that growth? Has it been accelerated, or am I just making stuff up?
No, you're 100% correct. And it when you lose the leader, whether it's scoring leader or a leader in the locker room, whatever you want to call it, and which the Bulls did in Zach LaVine, that opens up a big vacancy. And two guys have excelled at that. And Josh Giddey is one of them, and the other is Kobe White. And the two of them together have improved leaps and bounds over their regular season. Now, like their average regular season stats right now, they're both averaging 12 more points a game over the last five games than they are on their season averages. And it's even more than that because their season averages include the last five games. So, and it goes back further than that because right around the trade deadline. Now, the first couple of games when Zach, everyone's still trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, how is it playing out? Who's going to step up? Who's going to be the guy? And part of it maybe is Kobe White being moved off the ball so Kobe doesn't have to bring the ball up and putting the ball in Josh's hands and let him make decisions on the floor, which he's obviously doing a great job. His assists are up. His points are up. His rebounds are up. And he's just playing really well. So it's been a great thing to see that the opportunity was there for Josh to take advantage, and he has full-heartedly right now.
It's interesting. The Bulls sent out a note that Josh Giddey in his last 10 games, 220 points, 96 rebounds, and 100 assists. There's only 8 NBA players to ever do that. And you talk about Jordan S. Jordan was one, but this list of names with Jokic, Doncic, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, LeBron James, and that guy named Magic, and Jordan, and now Josh Giddey. And when you said Jordan-esque, I thought, oh, okay, there is Michael Jordan stealing the ball from behind from Karl Malone and coming up the court, and then all of a sudden there's the third straight championship of which you were a part of. And yes. Josh Giddey made the steal. Josh Giddey played defense. There's just so much of it there that I want, help me make sense of this when you see guys flourish. A player was traded, an opportunity was there, they met the moment, they're meeting the moment, and here's a Bulls team playing remarkably well, 4 in a row, probably 5 tonight against a Mavericks team that's just a disaster right now, mentally, emotionally, and physically, and Bulls have won 9 of 11, and they're still only in 9th place. I just imagine something like this would get you closer. So help me make sense of this. Help me balance it. Like something good's happening here, something important, and yet they're still only in the last play-in group.
Well, it's because of everything that happened before that. And let's not get carried away. I mean, I get it. And I look at the rest of the season, and I look at the Bulls' schedule. They have 9 games left, including tonight. And I see potentially them going 7-2 in those games, losing to, I think they play
the Cavs and the Celtics.
Cavs and the Celtics.
Oh no! The Thunder
and the other ones are awesome. And if they do that, they could potentially pass Orlando and have a better record than Orlando, because the Bulls are 2-1 against Orlando, so they own the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Orlando's got a little bit of a tougher schedule. So, having said all that, the whole season counts. And what the Bulls did in the first 2/3 of the season matters. And unfortunately, that put them in a big hole. Now, having said that, being that it's the end of the season, a lot of teams aren't playing their guys. Like Philadelphia normally would be a good game. I wouldn't just say that's going to be a Bulls win. But they're tanking, you know, for whatever you want to call it. They're not trying to win basketball games anymore. They're trying to work on a draft pick. And there's a lot of teams doing that. So we're getting a lot of wins. A win is a win. And the Bulls have had some very good wins. This past road trip going 4-2 was phenomenal. But we still need a little bit more. But having said that, I think we got a foundation to build on. I think with Kobe playing well, obviously Josh Giddey playing well, you got two guys who can carry it. Vizelis has really picked up, and he's playing great for a rookie right now, and he's there. We got to get Io back and get him healthy. I really think Herter and Collins and Jones have fit into this team and really helped them and fill specific roles within the system that the Bulls are running right now under Billy Donovan, and made this team a lot better. And the big thing for me is I'm a huge chemistry guy, and I know a lot of people like to argue with me about chemistry, but I've seen enough of it and seen it not on teams that should have won because the chemistry wasn't there. These guys genuinely like each other and want each other to succeed. And you could see it when Josh hit that shot. Everyone was jumping on him. There was not one guy that wasn't just screaming, yelling, and jumping up and down. This team truly loves to play and play with each other.
You should recognize that voice if you're a regular fan of the Bulls, regular listener of Here on the Score, Bill Winnington, radio analyst for the Score, and sits next to Chuck, and Chuck Swirsky and Bill Winnington bringing you Bulls action. And Bill's joining me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. The sound, the feel of that, the miracle on Madison Street. Now, you were there, like, when Bobby Hansen sunk that shot, and, like, all of a sudden, things turned around. Give me moments that compare to that. What did it make you think of anything in particular when Giddy hit the shot, or that sequence at the end that culminated in Giddy's shot? Where there, you've been part of pretty exciting moments. Just to help the class out here, kids, there was a game where Bill Winnington and Michael Jordan combined for 57 points.
Yeah, that was the Madison Square Garden. That was a fun one. I got the game winner, just like Giddy did. Only mine was a dunk at the basket, not a half-court shot. You know what it reminded me of, the energy? When Derrick Rose hit the game winner over on the same basket. Who's that against? Cleveland? And the Bulls won the game at a game winner. Last second shot, just the same way, came across, got the ball, put it on the floor, and turned around and just elevated and shot the ball. And the energy was very similar to that, only I think this was a better finish, just the way the game went, where the Bulls were up 13, down 18, battled back, take the lead, and then with 3 seconds left, Reeves makes that layup, and it's like, oh, boy, and we got no timeouts left. You got to get the ball inbounds, full court. And then for Josh to hit that shot was amazing. And it was electric in that building. It was electric the whole game. One, because it was the Lakers. And there were a lot of Laker fans or Laker jerseys. I don't want to say if they're fans, because I saw a lot of them cheering for the Bulls when they won. but they were wearing Laker jerseys. So, but it was, you know, when you get a guy like LeBron James and Doncic out on the floor on the same team, it makes the game special. And they're both there and playing, and for the Bulls to win that game and the way they did was just absolutely terrific and so much fun, and the energy was just amazing. A lot like the playoffs. It was very much like the playoffs back when Michael was playing.
Before I let you go, Bill Winnington is my guest. We're talking Bulls basketball, Bulls Mavericks tonight. You'll hear that on 780 WBBM. The Cubs are playing on the Score. But, Bill, the you mentioned Matis Bouzelis. Given his arc growth and the way Billy has played him some games, not played him, depending on matchups or how he sees his energy level, his skill level, his talent, or his growth, who would you compare him to? How do you see this arc going?
Who would I compare him to? That's a good one. He's fearless. He attacks the rim. He's not afraid to defend anyone. He'll go out there and challenge everyone. I think defensively sometimes he's a half a step slow reacting. The potential is there. I mean, he's 6'10". He's big body. He finishes the rim. I think he's going to get stronger. He's still young. What is it? What are you, 20? He's 20 years old. He's not even 21 yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to fill into his body. I'm trying to. I'm a horrible guy because my mind doesn't work on recall on who to remind him. And I haven't thought about it.
Okay.
But I really do think that he's going to be a big part of the Bulls' future. Because of what he's already shown us, and I know it's going to get better. He's shooting the ball better now than he did at the beginning of the season, and I know it's going to get even better.
What struck me is he's sort of, if you stretched out Alex Caruso, that's the way he is. There's an intensity about him. There's a ferocity, and there's a willingness to fight, and a welcoming any defensive situation. That's the way Caruso struck me. And I realize they're not the same body type, but that mentality is a wonderful thing, and I think that serves him well, and I think it serves the Bulls well. I think teammates love a guy like that.
Oh, absolutely, and the thing that teammates love about him, and coaches especially, he's very coachable. he wants to learn, and he's going to ask questions, and he wants to know if he makes a mistake, and he accepts criticism well. He takes it constructively like you're supposed to. He doesn't take it as a personal affront right now where, you know, he feels like he's less than because the coach is picking on him or not even picking on him, just telling him what he needs to do. So he's very coachable in that way. And the guys like that make great teammates because everyone knows that they want to win.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes down to it, you know, there's some guys that really care about their stats and worry about their stats. But most of the guys want to win, and they want guys that are winners, and he's definitely one of them.
Bill, I appreciate your time. Have a good call with Chuck tonight. Bill and Chuck's excellent adventure. Tip-off's at yes. 7. Tip-off's at 7 on WBBM, 780 a.m. against the Mavericks. It should be their fifth straight win and 10 of 12. Thank you for your time, Bill. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Always a pleasure.
All right. Bill Wennington, Bulls broadcast, sits next to Chuck. Bill and Chuck's excellent adventure. Let me clarify all this for you. Because the Cubs continue their series tonight against the Diamondbacks. Pre-game coverage will begin at 6:35 p.m. First pitch at 7:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Meanwhile, the Bulls host the Mavericks tonight at the United Center. Coverage begins at 6:45 on News Radio WBBM 780 a.m. Before I get out of here, we have a quick meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. I think it's important to sort of put our palms to our foreheads. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey. I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man, Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Yeah. Did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party. And I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Yes, the Wake and Bake Club is inside. I know where the smoke weed every day comes from. That's Nate Dogg. And that's also the name of Snoop Dogg's dispensaries. By the way, Ice-T opening up a New Jersey dispensary, which could be a Wake and Bake Club item, part of the meeting, and it wasn't supposed to be, but I just made it. Ice-T is opening up a dispensary in New Jersey. There you go. So, when you plan your trips out there. But this item that I wanted to bring to your attention. By the way, where does the guy breakfast at Bernie's, he had it wrong. Do you know where that comes from, Alex? I know you didn't make the open. Sean did.
I do not.
Okay. I still don't know. I never thought to ask until this. Maybe that's
my. Where's your curiosity, Steve? Yet. You're giving me crap.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you know, you're just right. It is. Ted Lasso said curiosity is an important part of it. I'd be curious. Okay. So, the J.M. Smucker Company, have you ever heard of them, Alex?
Do they make jelly?
Yeah, Smucker's Jelly.
Yeah, I have.
They've acquired Hostess, right? Hostess Snack Maker. Specifically, the snack maker of Twinkies and Ding Dongs. And now, J.M. Smucker Company is aiming to connect with a wider audience of the sweet snacking people, including fans of, guess what? What's coming up, Alex?
A certain date in April?
420.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pot's unofficial holiday. Well, it's actually an official holiday. So I put my palm to my forehead as I said, Twinkies and Ding Dongs? Of course. Okay, they're not cheese puffs. and that, but Twinkies and Ding Dongs. But only now is Hostess going to be exploiting Twinkies and Ding Dongs on 420. Dude, come on.
It took him a while.
Yeah,
I'll
tell you what.
I never thought of this. Like, remember the Girl Scouts that were setting their cookies up? The Girl Scouts got to this before Hostess?
Right. Standing outside a dispensary. Saying, you want to buy some Thin Mints? You
know, genius.
To go along with your sativa or your indica couch? I'm gonna say this because we always need revenue streams. Saturday Suckage, the Wake and Bake Club segment. Better get some of that Twinkies and Ding Dongs money. That's all I got to say. That's our meeting here. And Ding Dongs should sponsor the Wake and Bake Club. That's the way it should be, for starters.
I'll talk to the sales team after the show.
Can you find them? Are they there?
I'll talk to them on Monday. They're not here today.
All right. Nah, nobody is. And that's really good news. So if nobody important listened, I'll be back next week. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Alex Kuhn did a wonderful job of sucking from the start on the roll call and then just keeping it going. Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Thank you for listening. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.